Well, friends, something happened on the way to the forum. Basically, what happened here is that when that telephone rang, I failed to turn on the recording again, so lost about 10 minutes of discussion. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 141A. But I do need to go back a little bit from the point when that call came. And I think, you know, it's been rather important what was said. Not sure about the way it was said. But we've been discussing what the will is not. It's not that iron fixation, you know, ruled by Mars. It's not what's called implacable, unshakable, immovable focusing of all energies in the need to triumph, because the forces of darkness have that as well. There was a better organization within the Allies, so that much was there. But not just an iron fixation to stand steady against the evil forces. The Allies did have an aspect of this. It was the expression of the one-pointed desire for peace, but something else was added. So in the overcoming of selfish desire, the desire for the good is not enough. The desire for the good is not enough. There's something else was added, this plus, which swung the tide of victory onto the side of the Allies, and it came through an unrealized effort to understand and express the quality of the spiritual will, which is ever the will to good of the whole. It was an atmic contact. It was something that came through their level of identification with the good, with these, I call them standing waves of purpose, which exist in the world of being and which are created by the mind of the deity. Somehow they were in contact with that, maybe inchoately in a certain sense, but they touched it. So it was the manifestation of that divine energy which made the first divine aspect of will of power what it is. There is a will to good, and it can overcome all selfish desire. The will to peace cannot overcome the will to power, at least as it was being expressed and reinforced by the Black Lodge and their allies. This will to good is the distinctive feature of the Shambolic Force, and it has much of the second ray in it. It's kind of a second aspect of the will, whereas I always look at the will to be as being the first aspect. So somehow the Allies touched this. And it is that peculiar and distinctive quality of divinity which is so different that even the Christ himself was unable to express it with facility and understanding. So if a great becoming sixth-degree initiate like the Christ could not fully understand the will of Shambhala, how do we, who are on a much lower level, understand what the will of Shambhala is? It's true that at the third degree, it may, in a very attenuated form, begin to influence the disciple as the monad, well, it's now the initiate, as the monad begins its approach, but nothing like the fullness of the impact which the Christ received into his consciousness and also affecting his will in the episode in Gethsemane. Of course, D.K. used the word episode to represent happenings in the life of the Master Jesus or the Initiate Jesus, and event to represent the happening in the life of the Christ. And in a way, you know, sticking to his original definition, we can call this an event, actually. So I was saying that this episode, this so-called episode in the life of the Christ, could be called actually an event, really, because it relates to the gold rather than the silver. It's a decisive moment for humanity. So we can say, really an event. It's not easy for me, he says, to express its significance in words. The will, that is. 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years have gone since Gethsemane and since Christ made his initial contact with the Shambhala Force. So if the head of the hierarchy is making his initial contact with the Shambhala Force, what of Shambhala are we receiving or appreciating at the time of the third degree? It may seem stupendous to us, but it is not to be compared with that which the Christ received. His initial contact with the Shambhala Force, and by this means, and on behalf of humanity, established a relationship which even now, at the close of 20 centuries, is but a thin, frail line of connecting energy, that is the will. It is so for humanity and Shambhala, and not for the Christ, because he is in his role as world savior, a member of the council of Shambhala. I don't know if it's at the same depth as the Buddhas of activity, because they are already former planetary logoi, but still he's a member of the council. So this force of spiritual will was brought in by the allies, and it had the necessary effect. Probably the occult reasons for the victory of the allies was not understood. Maybe in a way they outnumbered the Germans. Of course, that's true. Germany, with its fourth Rey Soul, had started a two-front war. It had started a two-front war. The United States, with its Gemini, was drawn into a two-front war, but had more resources in the last analysis and resources of population, and were aided by the advance of the Soviet Union. So really, you know, the war was being fought on three fronts, really. The Russians were coming in from the west, the United States was coming in from the east, that's two fronts, and the United States was fighting a far, far to the west, so far that it became the east, a battle with Japan. There was a tremendous, I think, you know, the Russians had, I don't know my history too well in this regard, but their engagement with Japan was minimal, but toward the end of the war, it did begin to take on, but their major concentration was against the Germans on the eastern front of Germany. And then the Allies were coming in from the west, but the United States had to sustain as well the battle in the east. It required, with Christ as the head of the army of the forces of light, a great expression of the will to good. Now, probably the people fighting didn't really know what the will to good but they had in mind what good is, and they somehow made a contact with a deeper level of identity. They touched their soul in some way. How could those who were fighting for the Black Lodge touch the strength of soul? It really couldn't be done, at least in any degree when considering the group that was involved. They had that implacable, determined will, but it was based on the will to triumph as a personality, and this is not the same at all as the will which is based upon the sense of divinity within and upon an identification with that sense. So this was the deciding factor. In some way, the will, the spiritual will entered. In some way, the will to good entered and gave that irresistibility, that invincibility, plus the organization, that invincibility to the Allied forces. And, of course, the hierarchy was behind them. We sometimes say, well, you know, the hierarchy doesn't choose sides, but when it comes to a battle within the planetary logos between the lower principles and the hierarchy must choose sides. It's not their preference for certain human beings. It's preference for the energies which are attempting to express themselves. Otherwise, humanity would have been driven back into the cave of materialism. than the most material civilization we've ever seen would, or at least recently, would have resulted, as the Tibetan has told us. So, of course, and the hierarchy had criticism of certain popular figures who were pacifistic and refused to choose sides, and Gandhi was one of them, interestingly, although he's been very inspiring to many. But he had this Libran quality, a sun in Libra and Libra rising, and an idealism of the sixth ray, and he did not choose sides in this respect. And there was criticism of him, and also by Churchill, strong criticism. And as I had said, the power of the Nazis was growing in India. There was a strong group identified with them. So sometimes it's necessary to make that hard choice. It's the Kurukshetric choice. It's Arjuna in Libra on the field of Kurukshetra having to choose between members of his family, but some of them are embodying a higher energy and therefore must be, the choice must be on their behalf. So the will entered. The spiritual will, although dimly sensed, and even though for all of humanity it's but a thin, frail line of connecting energy, we need that now, and Vulcan needs to be discovered, and humanity needs even now to stand with massed intent for the four freedoms which some forces are attempting to undermine at this time in a reversion back to a sixth-ray time long past. We need this Vulcanian ability to stand with massed intent for the four freedoms at this time to avoid the all-destructive religious war which is part of the prediction. It could arise, a vision, a possibility which can be visioned. So the key here for the Shambhala Force is its right understanding and its group use. It was not understood by the Nazis. There was only an inverted use of that force in its materialistic aspect. It was not understood. At least the higher parts were not understood. Its group use was understood because Hitler surrounded himself by six others who were part of a group of seven, which inverted the Shambhala Force, and without that group application it could not have been so effective. One man could never do it. We in the West and in the more modern time in alliance with the forces of light have to understand the group will in a still higher way. We have to stand together with massed intent for the Shambhalic values of, well, of the good, and of purification, and of the destruction of death, and of evil, and the organization along right lines, purification, destruction, organization. So, group use and understanding. Well, now I have brought myself back to the point where I realized that somehow the recorder was not on. And so we are continuing that on page 581. Mankind has had much difficulty in comprehending the significance of love. So, if that is so, their problem in relation to the will naturally be still more difficult. Although, you know, if you are a student of esotericism under DK's method, you are involved in the curriculum of the will through the building of the Antikarana as much as in the curriculum of the development of love through soul infusion. So, we are being given a double curriculum, I often say, in relation to the Maurya College, Maurya Federation, once the Maurya College. It is a curriculum, a dual curriculum. For the vast majority of men, true love is still only a theory. Okay. So we haven't even completed curriculum number one. And this is true of many esotericists as well. They have the theory, they have the mind, they understand what it should be, but the actual experience of the energy is not theirs yet, and, or at least not in any consistent way. Love, as we usually interpret it, works out as kindness, but it is kindness to the form side of life. That is so true. And then you become pleasant and well-loved and popular when you are kind to the form side of life. I've seen first-rate types very unkind to the form side of life, and in the last analysis, they will be the most appreciated. I've sometimes talked about that movie called Gloria, which was about three different methods of psychotherapy. It was, I don't know, back in the 1970s, I suppose, or 60s, and three eminent psychologists were at work. Albert Ellis on the cognitive side, and Carl Rogers on the love side, and Fritz Perls on the will side. And eventually, although he was drastic, he was rough, Gloria ended up appreciating him the most for what he made her confront and overcome. And so it will be, I think, when we understand the true nature of the will, love to the soul-spirit side of man frequently works out as apparent unkindness to the form side, and this we have to get into our understanding. It's for this reason that the first-rate types are so often hated, as DK says. So, to the personalities of those around us, and fulfills itself usually in the desire to carry out our obligations and not to obstruct in any way those activities and relationships which tend to the well-being of our fellow men. I mean, of course, these are good things. You know, these are good things up to a point. DK sometimes talks to the first-rate types in his group, and he says, well, look, you are assured of your own love, and well, you should be, because it is there. But what about its manner of expression? You could use a little bit of the second ray in the way you carry this out. So for the vast majority of men, true love is still only a theory. Okay. Kindness to the form side of life, to the personalities. What is real kindness to the soul? What is real kindness to that part of ourselves which attempts to bring through the spirit? It fulfills itself in the desire to carry out our obligations, so we do not distress anybody. We do what is expected of us and thereby enhance the quality of their lives, and not to obstruct in any way those activities. See, the forces of obstruction, those are the loveless, cruel forces. That's what they're called. They obstruct what is good in man. So, in reflection of that, we try not to obstruct the perceived good of any person. And working out in the general well-being, oftentimes in form. I'll make sure here that I... Right. The general well-being, and we can say often the formal well-being of our fellow men. It expresses itself in a desire to end abuses and to bring about a happier material world conditions, and all of this is to the good, of course. It shows itself in mother love and love among friends, but seldom as yet in love between groups and nations where the will aspect is coming in. It is the theme of the Christian teaching, just as will, divinely expressed, will be the theme of the coming world religion. Ah, this is an important statement, and has been the impulse lying behind much of the good work done in the field of philanthropy and human welfare. But factually, love has never been expressed except by the Christ. Amazing statements. No matter how loving we may feel ourselves to be, and no matter how we may see ourselves expressing love, he tells us factually, love has never yet been expressed except by the Christ. And is he's talking about the masters of the wisdom as well in the factual expression of love. So although they express it, maybe it is considered incomplete when compared to the love of the Christ. So oftentimes the betterment of material conditions, which is certainly an aspect of the expression of love, is the main way it is expressed. And in reducing distress and increasing comfort and harmony between people and nations, even, love is expressed, although in relation to groups and nations it's not so well expressed. That's a higher requirement. But later, will divinely expressed will be the theme of the coming world religion. And will to be divinely expressed, This really requires a broad consciousness. So the only way we can express the will to good is to have a comprehensive consciousness of what really will bring about the expression through the plan of the divine archetype in the world of being, that expression happening in the lower worlds. So a broad consciousness is required. I think there's a place where love and will do blend, and many of the good psychological books have been about love and will together, or about what's called tough love. This is a type of love which includes the first ray, and it's not of the sentimental kind. It introduces a love which reaches into the welfare of the inner human being, and not just of the form. We realize that the form in this second ray planet and solar system is being sacrificed. We are now in this second of the major solar systems where it is consciousness which must excel and succeed, whatever happens to the form. And we oftentimes forget that, but when we can review our lives from a perspective of the inner worlds, we will realize the form is gone. Okay, the form is gone, but what is with me? It is the consciousness. You might ask, why, if this is so, do you emphasize this highest divine aspect? Why not wait until we know more about love and how to manifest it in our environment? Because in its true expression, the will today is needed as a propelling, expulsive force and also a clarifying, purifying agent. So we have some Shambhala factors are here, are present. Namely, purification and the hint at destruction through expulsion. It's needed. It's needed. We have a dire state. We live on an essentially first-ray planet. It's esoterically non-active, we are told, but the first ray will have its way, especially in the function within the solar locus. So, as a base of the spine center. So we have to begin cultivating this, and that whole question of progress onward and driving forward through space, which are the motions connected with the first ray, are needed now. Otherwise, we have the possibility at this juncture of relapsing into a condition which will not take advantage of the Shambhala impacts. So Shambhala itself is driving things with its impacts, propelling us forward, expelling via Pluto the evil that is still resident within us, within our aura. And we also need to see the difference between good and evil. And many rosy-eyed idealists do not see that yet. Their motives are good, but they are not realistic about the clear lines of demarcation between good and evil on our planet. Sometimes those lines are sinuous, as Master Moria has said, and it's tough to destroy the evil ones without destroying the good ones too. But increasingly, the sword, I come to bring not peace but the sword, this sword of clarification and discrimination between good and evil will be introduced to humanity, into human consciousness. The first recorded utterance of the Christ was spoken to his mother, the symbol of the substance aspect of divinity, when he said, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business?" So this is spoken in relation to Virgo, the mother, and also the sign of one of the signs of, interestingly, business. There are two kinds of business operating. And the busyness in relation to the third aspect was not what he had in mind. So is this the utterance of the Christ? Or is this the utterance of the Master Jesus, the initiate Jesus, on his own, because he was a third degree initiate? Or is this the utterance of an early contact with the Master Jesus by the Christ, where he was inspired to say such a thing? It's about the will, isn't it? I must be about my Father's business and not what you want me to do. You know, come out of the temple, come home, you've missed your supper or whatever, you know, taking care of the form. That business related him to the first divine aspect, the monad or father aspect, and was the fulfillment of purpose and the carrying out of intention, the will and purpose of God. That business related by him to the first divine aspect, the monad or father aspect, was the fulfillment of purpose, which later occurred, and the carrying out of intention, the will and purpose of God. So the Christ was already a fifth-degree initiate at that time. He had to have been, if he had been the head of the hierarchy ever since the Buddha left at the death of the Buddha, which was, what, at least 500 years before the birth of Jesus. So he was already foreseeing what he would have to do, and even if it was only the Master Jesus, he would be responding to the first impact of his monad, first conscious impact of the monad. His second utterance came at the time of the baptism in Jordan when he said to John the Baptist, "Suffer it to be so for now, and thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness." John said, "Look, Lord, you should be baptizing me. I should not be baptizing you, but Jesus had to enact, and of course the Christ really took over at that time, more powerfully at the time of the second initiation. He had to fulfill the law, fulfill the prophecy, and he had to go through externally the appearance of the initiation so that mankind would know that there was a purification to be done, and that even he, as a great Savior, would pass through that purification, as an example, at least. We cannot say that he was being purified at that time. It was more an enactment, wasn't it? Later in the desert, when the Christ was there, with the Master Jesus, I suspect, both together, they were undergoing a still more severe purification. The Christ, a kind of purification necessitated by the impending sixth initiation, and the Master Jesus by the impending fourth initiation. So anyway, here in this second initiation, which symbolizes the conquest of desire, he passes on into the realm of fulfillment, of the completion of planned righteous activity. So it's still aligned with the will, isn't it? It's planned and righteous, the right hand, aligned with the will. For his own personal desire, necessarily of the very highest order, on account of his high point in evolution, he substitutes the divine will, not because I want it to be done or because you want it not to be done, but because we must fulfill the law or all righteousness, which is the will. So let's say all righteousness is the will of the Father. We must fulfill that. So he is conforming, even here, to the divine will. And this is interesting because it is at the second initiation that will begins to be substituted for desire. Even in the case of the aspirant to initiation, it's no longer Mars, it is the growing power of Vulcan. The death of the most blatant forms of selfishness should there be found, and the spiritual will through Vulcan taking over at that point. It will be the head, which Vulcan rules, head center, over the solar plexus, which Mars rules. So these are statements of will by the Christ, or by Jesus the Christ. Again, at the close of his life, in the Gethsemane experience, he cries out. And, of course, is it a cry? Is it a cry? I mean, maybe it is. Maybe the Tibetan can read the record and to know that this is likened to a cry. Reaching up towards the sixth initiation, a cry generally coming from the, well, from something on the soft line ray. For a human being, it would come from the solar plexus related to the sixth plane. But here, we're probably not talking about that. A cry of the heart, cri de coeur, probably that. Father, not my will, but thine be done. Even then, and even for him, the achievement of the full expression of the will seemed well nigh impossible. So the Christ had a great humility and a great sense of proportion. And here it's not the Master Jesus at all, is it? I think at the second initiation, where he is enacting the purification of baptism with John the Baptist. I don't think it's Jesus either. I think it's the Christ, because he really did take over there at the time of the baptism. Maybe in the temple it can be something of the Master Jesus, who was already the third degree initiate. But these are all statements of will. And DK is trying to explain to us what the will is and is not. He's entering a section of the book where the will is going to be described. So even then, in the Garden of Gethsemane, and even for him, the achievement of the full expression of will seemed well nigh impossible. He was conscious still of the inherent dualism of his position and of the contrast between his will, very high, and God's will. Now, you know, it seems strange, you know, almost heretical that there could be a contrast, but that there could be such a contrast. But he was not yet an initiate of the sixth degree. He was going through that. He had not yet acquiesced. The idea of acquiescence seems so important when Pisces is involved. We've been talking about quiescence, quiescence in the face of the higher will, acquiescence, being quiet and non-rebellious and accepting in the face of the higher will. And thus he became on his own high level, and others, the Master Jesus on his level having to accept the sacrifice of crucifixion, and others at a lower level as they move from the mutable cross of selfishness onto the cross where the soul is developed and selflessness is developed. In these three utterances, he demonstrates his recognition of the three emerging aspects of shambolic life. It was an archetypal life that he led. The will which conditions the life aspect, the will which brings fulfillment of right human relations, and the will which finally conquers death. DK is going to elaborate on these. I think we find them in that order. Now, this is a Capricornian aspect of the will, and the will which brings fulfillment is a, he tells us, Leonian aspect. And the will which conditions the life aspect, we're going to have to call that the Arician aspect of the will. We're into this very, very important and most abstract section of the book, dealing with a subject which he has said we understand but very little. So, three utterances at the age of 12. Jesus at the age of 12, the completion of a symbolic cycle, the number 12, relating to Pisces ruling Shambhala through its Pluto, and also completing a complete Jupiterian cycle, which causes us to reflect on the fact that Jupiter is the ruler of the monadic plane, and the ruler of Virgo, hierarchically, which is the ruler of the monadic plane. So many shambolic indications there. Coming in here at the baptism at the age of 30, Jesus' age of 30, when will is to take over from desire. That is the theme, really, of the second initiation. It's not desire anymore. It's will that counts. It's the Vulcan-Mars opposition, the Sun, in a way, Sun-Mars opposition, going on to the third degree. And then the will that conquers death, but what form of death? When DK gives us the sixth formula, following Sun Black Antikorana, it's the formula of the word of death. It's all about the conquest of true death, of the forms that bring death, because they are out of alignment with the will of the planetary logos. So, Capricorn, the will that conquers death, and he will discuss this more. It's going to be a fantastic section of the book, but who is equal to really interpret it? That's the problem, of course. The three aspects are all related to the three divine expressions of spirit, soul, and body, of life, consciousness, and form, of life, quality, and appearance. And maybe they should be inverted, you know. maybe the appearance aspect and his purification, well, maybe the appearance aspect is related to the first utterance, the soul aspect to the second, and the life aspect to the third utterance. This phase of Christ's life expression has never been properly studied. Yet even a little grasp and understanding of it would aid humanity to drive evil, individual, group, and planetary, back to the place from whence it came, you know, via chapter 10 in Ray's initiation, with the rending of the veils and the driving of evil back onto the astral plane, to drive evil back to the place from whence it came, and would aid in the release of humanity from the terror which is today stalking abroad, defying God and man. And that's what the Black Lodge does. It is defying God and man. So the Christ could acquiesce, and we can acquiesce, and in this acquiescence, we drive evil back. In this acquiescence, we drive evil back. Evil cannot withstand the true spiritual will. The true will of Shambhala, even the will of Shambhala, is something greater than the spiritual will in a way. The will of Shambhala comes directly from the Father on the monadic and logoic planes. Even the logoic plane and the spiritual will, we understand, is a reflection of that, or an expression of that on the atmic plane. Still within the worlds of Brahma, still within the five worlds of human attainment. Well, may we attempt then to properly study this aspect of will. He did say, could not a group be gathered together, which is truly dedicating itself to an understanding and expression of the Shambhala force. I don't know how many groups have consciously been drawn together in that mode. The Shambhala energy is therefore that which is related to the livingness through consciousness and form of humanity. I am the way, the truth, and the life, said Christ, meaning he is related to the Shambhala force. And what does he mean by I? I don't think the personal I at all. He means that he is identified with that which is the path to travel, the truth of things, and the great source of being, which is the life of all things, life itself, being and life, in many ways having to be equivalent terms. We need not consider its relation to the rest of the manifested world, though there is something to consider there, especially to the mineral kingdom. It concerns the establishing of right human relations and is that condition of being which eventually negates the power of death. So much said in this. The Shambhala energy, he's calling it an energy here, he's not calling it a force. When it's a force, it's directly applied in an impact. When it's an energy, it is what it is, and from that energy can be focused the force. It concerns the establishing of right human relations, which are archetypal and are found in the world of being, which is within the world of Shambhala. Archetypes are found particularly on the monadic plane and logoic plane, and it is there that right relations are seen in their pure and archetypal form. Meanwhile, we have to approximate the archetype. One great piece of advice, you know, in your life, approximate the archetype, but then you first have to find what it is. It is therefore incentive and not impulse. Let's say incentive involves the will, true incentive. True incentive involves the will, and it's not impulse, something arising from the form nature. It does not arise from the form nature. It comes from the very center of our nature, and it has a goal, a vision, a purpose in mind. It is, the Shambhala energy is, a realized purpose and not the expression of desire. From realized purpose comes the will, one way of looking at will, from realized purpose comes the will to carry forth that purpose into incarnation. So, you know, our strength of will depend on the degree to which we have realized purpose. Desire works from and through the material form upward. It's a sort of a reaching out of the elemental nature and of the lower chakras. Will works downward into form, bending. There's your Vulcanian word. Bending form consciously to divine purpose. I think, you know, these we really have to look at as very important statements. Desire works from and through the material form upwards. Will works downwards into form. Outward, you know, from the center to the periphery. Bending form, you know, bending it into shape. I sometimes think, you know, there's a slang saying, don't get bent out of shape, you know, when you are having a reaction to something. But that precisely is what's happening with the Vulcanian aspect of the soul. It's bending us into the proper shape, which begins to approximate the archetype. The one is invocative and the other is evocative. So I guess he's saying that desire is invocative. We call or cry desire. We call or cry, a more intense call. And the other is evocative. It summons response. It makes response irresistible. Desire, when masked and focused, can evoke will. So a very strong Mars, focused desire, can bring a response from Vulcan, Vulcane. The story of Abel the shepherd and his brother Cain. But Cain kills Abel, and the will kills desire. Desire, when masked and focused, can invoke will. Will, when evoked, ends desire and becomes an imminent, propulsive, driving force, stabilizing and clarifying, and among other things, finally destroying. Whoa, this is so wonderful. If you'll excuse me, I'm going to do it again, 583 and 584. I'm just going to list here for the AAB extracts what we're going to call, that won't do, my number locks. Right, going up here, and we'll call it desire and will. Contrasts and contrasted. Contrasts, okay. And we need an R in there, don't we? All right, so, you know, I have to do this. Is it a compulsion? Is it an impulse? Is it an incentive? Is it will? Is it a fixed determination? Let's just say that it is, for the moment, what it is. It is kind of a service. It is that. So this AAB extracts and desire, will, contrasts, and contrasted. And I'll put the word in here, definition. Definitions. Because we need those definitions. So Shambhala energy is incentive and not impulse. It is realized purpose and not the expression of desire. Desire works from and through the material form upwards, up to something higher, so it seems. It can also work downward, I suppose. Will works, low desire. Will works downward into form, bending, and that's a Vulcanian term, but I think I'll put it in red. Bending form consciously to divine purpose. So the soul is the great blacksmith here, and we can become the blacksmith of ourselves once we realize ourselves as the soul in incarnation and identify with the soul on its own plane. The one, i.e. desire, is invocative, and the other is evocative. Desire, when masked and focused, can invoke will. Okay. If our desire is keen enough, will, when evoked, and is now an active force within the individual or group, ends desire because it is superior to desire. It works from the place where unification is already revealed or realized. It ends desire and becomes an immanent within. Will is immanent, propulsive, driving forward through space, driving force, progress onward, stabilizing, because it's Vulcan, it's rooted, it's standing, clarifying, because the fogs of glamour and emotion do not interfere, they are out of the way, and among other things, finally destroying. Okay. Well, that is really important, that paragraph. Finally destroying. Now, DK, of course, will tell us that there's a lot more to it. But he has to give us what we can understand.